Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
Hey, and welcome back. My name is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. I've got another relationship show for you this week. And on the show today are both Ellen Bader and Peter Pearson. And this is a couple that started a company called the Couples Institute years ago. And they specialize in, you guess it, working with couples. They work on relationships and teaching people how to work more as a team. And this is one of my favorite ones to date. We start the show out talking about how to create a vision for your relationship, just like you would your career. A lot of us are really adept at creating a big, compelling vision for our career or for our personal development or for our fitness. But I personally have never really done that for my relationship. And so that was an eye-opening thing for me to just think about it more as a thing to shoot for rather than just trying to fix things that are broken in a relationship. We talk about how to communicate more clearly, and we spend a lot of time talking about how to fight. Personally, I've had like a rewiring in my brain of how I think about fighting. And so my first question was like, how do we think about it? Is it something that we should avoid? Is there an end goal where, you know, years down the line, we shouldn't fight a lot? And these are just questions that I've been wrestling with. So that's where the conversation starts to go. And these guys are just full of tactics and strategies for conflict resolution, for communication, et cetera, that are just immediately applicable in relationships, including what to do if you're in a really bad fight. So I asked them, you know, what if you're in a fight that starts out small, but then doesn't get resolved, and it just builds and it builds and it builds and it goes on for days and then weeks and maybe even months. And what should you do in that situation? So if you're someone that has been or are currently in that kind of situation, then I think you'll find this podcast really helpful. Finally, we talk about rituals that you should have, like habits you should have in your life, in your relationship to cultivate a healthy environment, healthy relationship. This is one of my favorite topics, so obviously I get super fired up talking about it, and these guys are two of the best that I've ever met on the subject. So I know you guys love this stuff, so I know you'll enjoy it as much as I did. If you haven't done so already, head to iTunes, leave me a quick review, let me know how I'm doing. Enjoy your day, enjoy the show. Ellen and Pete, thanks for joining me. How are y'all?
Hey, we're great.
Listen, I'd be even better, Michael, if I had just come back from a workout, but I didn't. So you're with me being slow, lethargic, non-energetic, et cetera, et cetera. Sorry.
Yeah, you sound very lethargic and non-energetic.
But I tell you what, every time when I look at your website, I feel this irresistible urge to go out and get into better shape. I see all these hard bodies, and then I am fighting my own two deadly sins, which is sloth and gluttony. But looking at your website gets me motivated to do something. Even if I sprint to the refrigerator, it's better.
Yeah. There you go. That's all you need. Just sprint from place to place and you'll be fine. Well, hey, this podcast is going to be all about relationships, but maybe after talking with me a little bit, we can, I'll inspire you a little bit to get in the gym or to sprint from place to place.
Terrific.
Okay. So I rarely start in such a generic way, but I think it's a great place to start here. How did you, and the reason I say this is because you're both experts in relationships and you are in a relationship. So how did you both start doing what you do, and how did you go on to create the Couples Institute?
Take it away, Ellen.
Okay. So when we met and we fell in love and we decided to get married, we also decided that we wanted to do something together. And we weren't sure what it was. So we lived for a year with a thing called X. And we just said, we're going to do X. And we started exploring and experimenting with all kinds of different X's, including wild ideas like flying off to the Himalayas and considering importing houseboats from India. But so we were, yeah, we were exploring the whole world of possibilities. But
so you were a couple, and as a couple, you were picking different career paths together.
Well, we were picking. I was a psychologist at the okay. time. Pete had been, when he moved to California, when we got together, he had some time before he could transfer a license. So we were in an exploring phase of maybe we'll do something different. Maybe we'll do the same thing. Who knows?
Gotcha.
And also then actually one of the best things happened. I used to teach family therapy. We got an invitation to go to Australia and teach couples work. And so on our way, we stopped in Bali and we decided to create this workshop, which we created, and people absolutely loved it. And that was kind of the beginning where we started saying, hey, we do know stuff about relationships and the importance of the vitality of a relationship. And so we started just putting stuff out in the world and doing more and more. And then at one point we decided, all right. And then we played with the name too, like what are we going to call ourselves for a while? And we landed on Couples Institute, and we've been that ever since.
Has one of these been more important or influential in your business? You, on one hand, you both have years and years of formal education, and you both, it sounds like, become psychologists. And then you have even more years of experience in being in a relationship together and getting to practice the principles that you're teaching. Has one been more influential than the other?
Life is more influential than school.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been together since, 1980 as a couple. And let me just say this, Michael. In all those years together, Ellen and I really have trouble identifying with entrepreneurial couples who work together. We have trouble identifying with their struggles because we've never really had a problem in our relationship of disagreement and priorities and urgencies and conflicts of interests and values and priorities. We've never experienced any of that. So it's hard for us to identify with mere mortal couples.
Mere mortals. I love it, man. So why is that the case? Why are you so different than so many other relationships that go through almost constant trials and tribulations?
We're still working our way through that maze, Michael. I tell you, we're still working our way through that maze. And if two people have strong personalities, they are going to disagree. And you got to figure out ways how to do that if you're going to keep working together. And we keep evolving what we do and who we want to work with, and we pivot and change how we want to work and the way we want to work, which requires ongoing, constant negotiation and adjustments.
I think one of the things that's made it work is over the long haul, because like we work in Silicon Valley and we've been working with a lot of couples who try to work together and don't succeed, as well as those who do. But I think one of the secrets for us has been a willingness to redefine roles at different times. And right. So there's been many, many different roles we've each occupied, and we've taken the time to get clarity about those roles.
So maybe it's my personality, but I think a lot of people will be able to relate to this question. So in most areas of my life, I have a very clear vision of where I want to go. Yeah. Years ago, I wanted to be a CrossFit Games champion. And so I had this vision of who I wanted to become and how I, like the steps that I needed to get there. Career is kind of similar. And my question is, how important, if at all, is it to create a vision, to consciously create a vision together with your partner of where you want to go as a couple, and identifying how important is it to identify the things that you're working towards so that you know what you're actually doing day to day?
Oh my God, what a great question. What a great question. And I think you're blessed that you've had this vision for some time. I think too many couples, after they get married, they stop talking about, or in a committed relationship, after a while, they stop talking about what they want to create together. And they just fall into a rut and they start lead more parallel lives. But to create the definition of, I think, as a couple, as a team, is what Ellen and I focus on a lot. And that's two highly interdependent people who have mutually agreed upon goals, and they hold themselves individually accountable to reach those mutually agreed upon goals. And that's what starts to create a team. Having a collective vision that energizes you, a collective vision that's bigger than you are as an individual, and often even bigger than you are as a couple. That's the kind of stuff that propels us forward. And I think then we start to realize the promise of why we got together in the first place.
So what are a couple examples of things that people can aspire to in a relationship?
Well, can I answer your first question that Pete just answered?
Certainly, yes.
So many couples don't have a vision, and they don't try to create it because the creating of it isn't easy. It's like it's hard enough for a lot of people to have that individual thing. Like you said, you were clear where you wanted to go. A lot of people can't even do that as an individual, and to do it as a couple is even harder. And so they just give up. One of the things, like, we have some questions that we'll give couples to actually go out and over dinner and start asking each other to get more direction in that vision. But also, a lot of people are familiar with vision boards, but they've never done one with their partner.
For their relationship.
And it's a really cool thing to get a ton of magazines and get them from all different things. I mean, you know, get athletics, get food, get travel, get children, get in all kinds of areas, and just start cutting out pictures without knowing why you're cutting them out. Like every, you know, and then start, and then both people begin to paste them on the board. And images will begin to emerge, and themes will begin to emerge. And I've worked with some couples where they've had to do 3, 4, 5 different vision boards before they land on something that says, okay, this is where we want to put some energy in the next period of time. And I've had some couples create some unbelievably amazing things. And sometimes it's even just getting clear on, we want a family, we're ready to have children. But whatever it is, it's like, you're working with a little bit with the unconscious at first to create those images.
Yeah, I would imagine at first it could look a little bit like there are a million different things that together we could work towards. Right. But looking at the themes, what are the few things that make or mean the most to us? And what are we really going to spend our time and energy on?
And what excites you?
What excites your imagination? There are three questions that you can ask of yourself as a couple and as an individual, and see where the overlap is and to see where you can support each other. But the three questions that might help focus a bit are, what is it that I want to do that excites my imagination? How do I aspire to be as I go through life? What are the personality qualities and traits that I look up to in other people that I aspire to be? So things I want to do, how I aspire to be, and what do we want to have just in terms of possessions and the kinds of possessions. So to do, be, and have can help you start to focus the questions a little bit more.
Rather than what most people focus on is, what do I want to achieve? And they kind of leave it there, right?
Right.
Exactly. I really, really... The part about how we want to be on the way really, really resonates with me. And that's been on the top of my mind for several years now. And in a relationship, that's maybe the most important thing.
Oh, it's how I aspire to be. You know what's interesting? A quick communication technique I will often give to couples when they come in and let's say that they are really high conflict couples and they argue over anything in a hurry, never missing an opportunity for a disagreement. They'll be in my office and they'll start arguing about something and I'll just say, wait a minute, hold the phone right there. I'll give them each an index card and I will say, as you talk about this for the next 5 minutes, write down how you would aspire to be in this discussion. And then I'll give them examples like maybe you'd like to be patient. Maybe you'd like to be curious. Maybe you'd like to be understanding. Maybe you'd like to be empathic. Write down three qualities, maybe four, of how you would aspire to be if you come from your higher self having this discussion. So they write them down on an index card. And I'll say, now hold that card in front of you and continue the discussion based on how you aspire to be. And I'm telling you, for the next 5 or 6 minutes, probably 85% of the couples shift into what looks like they are just honor graduates from a communication course.
Amazing.
Because it's focusing on how you aspire to be rather than teach them techniques. If they focus on how they aspire to be, the what to do will fall into place.
So maybe the next time that we find ourselves in some kind of disagreement, argument, or fight, then we have this tool in our back pocket.
Totally.
I like tactics.
Well, yeah. And then you're living congruent with your values too, because
exactly.
you've set those for yourself.
That is awesome. So let's dive in more into fighting. And my first question about fighting is, how can we think about it, generally speaking? Are they something that we should avoid, something we should embrace? Is there an end goal as we get, you know, into it, once we've been in a relationship for 10, 20, 30 years, is there a goal we should be aspiring to? How can we think about fighting?
So that's a great question, yeah. Which is, how do we think about it versus what do you do? And by changing how you think about it, you will start to change what to do. First of all, when think about this. If I have a couple fighting in the office, and I'll say, go ahead and continue the argument, except you can't do three things. You cannot blame, you cannot be bossy, and you can't whine. You can say anything except be blaming, whining, or bossy. And when you take those three things out of a fight, and those three things, blaming, bossy, and whining, are almost always driven by fear and insecurity and feeling threatened. So we want to cover up those feelings of anxiety, fear, threat, insecurity, and we shift into bossing our partner so that they will change what they're doing and we get relief. Or we blame them and they will say, oh, you're right, honey, I shouldn't do that anymore, and they will quit it and then I get relief. Or whining, and maybe they'll have pity on me and do something to change what they're doing and then I'll feel better. But most fighting is driven by the emotional brain, and it's driven by fear or threat or anxiety or the fear of loss of something. Or just starting to think differently about what drives fear is the beginning.
You want to hear some other things about fighting? You want to respond?
Please.
So, I mean, most people, when they start a fight, don't think about saying the outcome that I'm looking for from this fight is. And yet, if you know what the outcome is, you're already way ahead of where most fights go. A lot of fights are competitive around who's going to get what they want or who's going to get their needs met or who can overpower the other one.
Who's going to be right or wrong.
Right, exactly. And we're triggered. Often when we're fighting, our emotional brains are triggered. And so if you want to get to a good outcome, part of what you're going to have to do is be able to calm down that trigger enough to be able to process effectively and get to a good solution. So if you know, you know, even if you know what you're trying to go for and you can say to your partner, hey, just be quiet for a minute, listen to me, and here's what I'm trying to do. Here's what I want. Here, you know, can we try to get to this outcome? It helps to prevent huge escalations.
Just right. yes to what Ellen is saying. If I have a fighting couple in my office and I'll say, Charlie, what do you think the main point Sue is trying to communicate to you in this discussion or argument? And about half the time, Charlie will scratch his head and say, I don't know. The other half, Charlie will say, well, I think she's trying to say X, Y, or Z. And most of the time, Sue is going to say, that's not accurate. We think we are being extraordinarily clear about what we want or the intention of the disagreement. And 90% of the time, it's not. Just by saying, honey, I would like to talk about X. And my intention in this discussion is, I would like to be understood. I want to brainstorm. I'd like you to be empathic with me. I want to solve the problem. But most people think they're being clear with the intention of their argument, and they are not.
So it puts the focus on what being explicit about what we want rather than focusing on what the other person did wrong. Am I following?
And saying, I want you to shut up and clean the house. Not quite saying what you want.
So is my thinking correct here? This is kind of a new, because I grew up in a household where I didn't see my parents. I can't remember of a single time seeing them fight. And I think they have an amazing relationship and still do, but I never saw them fight. And so I think I grew up just trying to avoid conflict. And it's really come out in my relationship with Adi. And I thought that fights are something to be avoided. But I'm starting to change my belief around that, thinking that really, even if it's frequent fighting, as long as we're learning from the fights and the fights themselves are evolving, then they're nothing to be avoided at all. I should definitely be trying to be aware and conscious of how I'm behaving and how I'm showing up in the relationship. And I know that fights are may just happen, right? But as long as they're evolving, the fights themselves are evolving, then it's nothing to be avoided. Am I on the right path?
You are on a brilliant path and a very statistically unusual path for somebody who is a conflict avoidant person.
Awesome. I like that.
Yeah. Most conflict avoiders stay like they want to be conflict avoiders. I grew up like you, never seeing my parents fight, very conflict avoidant family, good relationship. And then I met him. And so I had to learn how to fight.
To hold your own.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. I grew up in a family where if you couldn't make fun of yourself, somebody else would do it for you.
But you know, one of the skills that we teach couples, which you can probably relate to from the industry you're in, is how to coach and be coached by each other. And also we talk a lot about building emotional muscle. So one aspect of emotional muscle actually is related to coaching and being coached. Like we teach couples to learn how to, they're in a fight and, or they're having a really, let's say, a painful interaction, and to be able to stop and think, what is it that I would really like to hear from you right now? And to be able to tell each other, okay, it would feel really good to me to hear you say X or Y. Whatever that is. And what that is designed to do is it calms the intensity of the emotional brain that's been triggered. And nobody's held to, like, I'm not gonna force an agreement out of him by something that I say, but a lot of fights are based in pain or hurt when you've missed each other or you're not getting what, you know, the other person is trying to communicate. And so learning how to coach each other on what would help. Mm-hmm. It's like you said, you start learning from the fights and you start learning more about each other. And then you start knowing how to get out of them a whole lot faster.
See, what Ellen is saying in a way is it helps you not be afraid of strong disagreement.
Gotcha.
Because if you know you can repeat, then you're willing to take, or a part of you then is willing to take a chance on speaking up. And if it starts to head south and your partner says, you know, instead of expressing it the way you just did, like I'm a stupid numbskull and I'll never learn anything and dumber than a bag of hammers. It would be nice if you said it like this. And if the person shifts and then says it like that, it gets you out of that downward spiral and it can help you express strong disagreements more easily.
That is such a great tactic. And we've used a strategy similar to that. And what I've realized is that because when I started in this relationship, it's the most committed I've ever been. And it was very quick that I was so committed. And I had to, like in relationships in the past, whether it be intimate or friendships, when I was in a fight, I just wanted to be right. I just wanted to win the fight. And what I had to realize and continually have to remind myself of is there is no winner or loser. And if I treat it that way, then I always lose. And my goal here is just to get some need met. And so if she asked me, hey, can you say that? Can you just say that another way?
Yeah.
In the past, I would have continued to just say it the way I want to say it because I want to win and I want to make her feel bad.
And you don't want to be lost.
Well, and I was right. going to say, there's nothing competitive in your personality, is there?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so I've had to learn to just, it's a little bit of a, it's vulnerable on her part to ask for me to say it a different way. And then it's vulnerable for me to like put my sword down and say it a little more softly so that we can both reach a mutually agreed upon conclusion rather than one of us being right or wrong. And that's a hard thing to do. And I think it's a constant practice.
It is. It absolutely is. But the way that you're describing it, Michael, is it sets the foundation for a couple to create a team. And I really like the acronym for team, TEAM, which is together each accomplishes more. And you only get there by having the tools to repair after a fight or to get clearer on and feeling like it's okay and or you're worthy enough to express what you want, which keeps a lot of people from being clear about what they want. They just don't feel worthy enough or deserving enough. So they hide it and they hope their partner can read their mind. And when their partner does it, they start to develop some resentments.
Do you have any strategies for people that are in a really, really bad fight? Like something, maybe it started as one thing and then they just brought out all the stops and they, you know, each said something that they didn't mean. And now it's just this messy thing that's gone on for weeks or months. How can people get out of that kind of fight?
Well, first of all, let's talk about how they get out of it if they're right in the middle of it. You know, they're actually fighting and it's a big, bad fight. I mean, people have heard talk about timeouts a lot, but somebody having the wherewithal to say, timeout, I need a break, is really important. And so
that's hard to do, by the way, to call timeout, because we want to get in the last word, and then our partner wants to get in the last word. It's a good strategy to call a timeout, but hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a really essential thing that makes it work with a timeout, which is the person who calls the timeout says, and I will be back in 6 hours, 24 hours, really not much longer than 24 hours to pick it up again. And each person knows that, hey, I'm going to use that time instead of just rehearsing nasty things I can say to you when we get back together. They're actually going to start thinking about how can I move this fight forward? How can we either coach each other? How can I say what I was looking for? How can I say I'm sorry for how I behaved and be really willing to own the pieces where you blew it? So getting the quiet time is a really important thing when people are in the midst of a big fight.
So you just mentioned one of the most important things that I think I've ever learned in relationships, which is taking personal accountability for my part in any situation. What advice do you have for someone that might listen? Let's say someone listens to this podcast and they realize, holy shit, I need to take accountability for my part. And that's the best I can do to show up in a relationship. but their partner might not be in the same boat. They might not have that language, or they might not approach life that way. How can they, like, should they just go into it being accountable and hope that their partner does, or what, how can they approach that?
Well, I'll give you one way, and I'll be curious what Pete would say. But like, one of the things I do with couples often is kind of a three-step process, which I'll brainstorm on a board. What are all the yucky things that you do when you're upset or you're angry? And so, there, you know, do you blame? Do you yell? Do you scream? Do you name call? Do you run away? So you get a list of the things that people typically do when they're mad or upset. And then you ask yourself, okay, which are my favorites? Like, what do I tend to do? What are my top, let's say my top two on that list of a big list?
Like, okay. What?
So, you know, one of my top ones used to be getting passive aggressive. So, you know, so I have to acknowledge, okay, I can get passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. Or if somebody's a real name caller, then they say, okay, I know that what I do is I call you names, and I hit below the belt.
I let you interrupt.
Yeah, never. So then you have that idea, like you say to yourself, okay, if I'm honest with myself, these are things I do when I'm triggered. Okay. Then you can brainstorm a list of what are things that people either you've admired or that you like what they do when they deal with conflict. What are positive traits that people have? So those might be things like asking good questions, about reflective listening. It might be they're empathic, but you get a list of the things that you like that people do. And then you pick one or two that you want to aspire to. Okay.
This is great. Keep going.
And then usually, like, if I'm working with a couple, I'll tell you how I do it when I'm working with a couple, but then I'll go back to your podcast question, people listening. When I'm working with a couple, I'll say, okay, the things that you do, the getting passive aggressive or the yelling, those things are covering a vulnerable emotion. So those things you hide. Every one of us hides things. It might be feeling scared. It might be feeling inadequate. It might, you know, whatever it is, you have a hidden emotions of vulnerability that are underneath it. So then I ask people to put in to like one sentence almost, here's what I want to stop doing. Here's what I want to start doing.
Or do more of.
And here's the feeling I'd like to be better able to show you.
Ah, wow.
So in,
very,
you know,
powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anybody's listening to this, if they really want to, and they're the ones who are listening, they can do that for themselves. They can say to, and then they can go back to a partner and they can say in an accountable way, you know, I realize that I hit below the belt when I'm mad at you and I say nasty things and I get nasty. And what I want to aspire to, or what I want to do instead, is I want to take a deep breath and actually listen more to you than going on the attack.
See, the time to do this, Michael, is not when you're in the middle of a fight.
Right.
It's sitting down with your partner and having some of these discussions when things are calmer, when you're in a good place, and with the intention of, I want to work better as a team with you, honey, so that we can get through these tough discussions better together, in better shape, so that you have these discussions ahead of time. Because sometimes when you're in the middle of it, it's too late. You know, it's like the dam is broken. Now it just has to run its course for a while for sometimes.
This is a really, I just had an aha moment as you were saying this, because, and I think we have an incredible relationship and we're doing really well. And you just gave me such a huge upgrade, because I've been so focused on what I don't want to be and how I don't want to be. And I've just been focused on being less of those things, right? Maybe less selfish or self-centered, for instance. rather than focusing on what I do want to be or what I, and focused on what I want to show her more of. And I know in every other area of my life that I need to focus on what I do want rather than what I don't want. But I've kind of been, I haven't been fully aware of the way that I've been approaching the relationship. So that's a huge upgrade. Thank you.
That's really cool what you're saying, Michael, because if we focus on what we don't want, basically it just brings us up to the line of neutral. Okay. It's beyond neutral into the creation. So that under stress, you're going to fall back and do what you don't want because you have no compelling picture to pull you forward. And mostly what we need is a compelling picture that pulls us forward. And that's how we unhook from that lizard brain, that emotional brain, right, is by having a compelling picture that pulls us forward.
You know what might be fun for you guys to do? Which is actually sit down together and brainstorm a list of all the positive things that you might do. Mm-hmm. And when we've done this for years in groups of couples, and the couples can always come up with a longer list of the bad side.
Yep.
It never fails. And it's much harder to brainstorm the list of the positive side. But then once you've done that, you might say, okay, when I look at this list, here's something I know I want to add, but then ask her, what do you wish I would add? And then the same vice versa, so that you know actually from each other what would feel really good to have the other one add to their repertoire.
Yeah, I really, really like that. Guys, if you're not in the habit of having these types of conversations, I don't even know how you would classify them. More like, I don't know, about brainstorming, or it's almost like strategy sessions in your relationship. I highly, highly recommend it. Adi and I have done this for years in all kinds of different ways. We ask each other questions off of different lists, or we do exercises out of books, and it creates a really safe place to have a vulnerable conversation. I'm definitely looking forward to having this one.
Now, let me add one more, again, a PS to what Ellen was saying, which is, if you want your partner to change in whatever area possible, I would suggest the requesting partner ask two things. Honey, are you interested in making that change? You know, like if Ellen said to me, Pete, do you have any interest in picking up the clutter around the house? So first she checks out, do I have an interest in doing it? And then I say, well, a little bit. And then Ellen would say, well, it's really important for you to pick up clutter around the house, and here is why that's important to me. Then if Ellen said, what can I do that would make it easier for you to make the change I would like you to make? Too often, we just tell our partner what we want them to do differently, but we neglect to say, here's how I think I could help you. Would that work?
Awesome. Awesome. So guys, do you have, I want to be respectful of your time. I know we got a few minutes left. Do you have any rituals either in your own relationship or that you recommend to others that they practice on a regular basis to cultivate an awesome relationship?
I want to answer one thing back just a second ago before that. Please. When you were talking to your audience about having those kinds of conversations. And you are so right about the importance of what you were describing. And what happens with too many couples is they give that up way too early. And especially if they're not really good at it, they give it up. But the vitality that stays in a couple over 30, 40, 50 years of marriage comes from developing the emotional muscle to do that. And too early, when people run into difficulty or pain, they just stop doing it. And then the whole relationship atrophies. So when you talk about rituals, to me, some of the rituals that are important are, do you have a time and place to put energy into your relationship? Do you have a reliable time in the week that you get together? we have a special thing we do for our anniversary where we review the year and plan for the next year. That's a ritual that we've done for years and years and years, and that we keep it all on a scroll so we can go back over, you know, all the years that we've done that and look at what stood out each year. So those are.
I would add one other thing, Michael, which is how to train your kids not to be afraid of conflict, which is, if you have a disagreement in front of the kids and you don't get it worked out for whatever reason, if the kids are over the age of 5 or 6, you go back to the kids and say, guess what? Your mother and I or your dad and I resolve this, and this is what we did to resolve it, and this is why we did it. And explain to the kids what you did to resolve it. If a kid is like under the age of 5 or 6, if the young kid sees the parents hug after a disagreement or a fight, then that kid knows the world is okay.
Wow.
That's all they need to know, is the world is okay. Mom and daddy love each other again. I don't have to be afraid of disagreements. When they get older and you go back to the kids and say, this is how we did it, then they go, oh, I guess I don't have to be afraid of disagreements. And you are giving your kids an extraordinary gift of communication.
Yeah, I think one of the worst pieces of parenting advice, and it's a very common one, is never disagree in front of your kids.
Big problem. Oh my God. How are kids going to learn how to do it otherwise?
Yeah,
that's so interesting.
You don't want to be nasty in front of them at all.
Or if you do, clean it up and tell them how you did it.
Yep.
But the base of so much good stuff in a relationship is learning how to accept and build on differences. It's not all building on similarities.
Right. Yeah. When you're combining two completely different people and combining their entire lives, you're bound to hit some boundaries every now and then and cross some boundaries. And so there's just got to be some disagreements and arguments along the way. So that's another huge upgrade. So is there anything?
I'm glad you're getting something from this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know if I am, then they are too. Is there anything really important about relationships that I didn't ask that I should have before we get out of here?
Well, I would say this. I mean, the place that we're working more and more is with entrepreneurial marriages. And so many people now, especially with the internet couples are working together more and they're building businesses, and getting into business together with your partner can be a disaster or it can be the most powerful thing you could possibly do. And so one thing is get help if you need it, but also to recognize that there are a lot of challenges, but there's just a lot of wonderful things that can come from that. And there are a lot of specific skills that people can learn to make it work.
So if you had one thing to say to entrepreneurial couples, because there are a ton of gym owners that listen to this podcast that own a business with their spouse, what do you have one powerful thing to leave them with to help them navigate through those different roles?
I'll give you a short one, and I mean there's some others that would take a little longer, but the short one is, don't confuse business talk with relationship talk. Like when you're having a business talk, keep it business. And even have a place that's your business talks happen. And then when you're having a personal talk, you can get into your dynamics of who's competitive or, you know, what you don't like about what you're saying to each other.
Right.
But doing a business talk, keep it a business talk.
I would say yes. Which is either in business or in your relationship, whenever you're contemplating a change, which basically means you're moving into an area where you don't feel like you have enough information, skill, knowledge, talent, etc., and it creates anxiety. It takes courage to have your business. It takes courage to keep developing your relationship. The best definition I have come across for courage is, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is deciding that something is more important than your fear.
That's a great place to end. Thank you guys so much. Where can people find out more about your work?
And thank you.
Great to be here.
Yeah, to find out more, go to couplesinstitute.com, or better yet, send us an email, particularly if you're interested in the entrepreneurial marriage. Just send an email to us, either Ellyn at couplesinstitute.com, or Pete or Ruth, any three of the three of us, and just put entrepreneurial marriage in the subject line, and we'll get back to you and tell you more about what we're doing with that.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you.
It was fun to meet you.
It was great doing this. Thank you, Michael.
Likewise.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
This episode is finished, but your training journey continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW and grab your free pack of 32 accessory workouts that you can incorporate into your training and start improving your strength immediately. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW.